We will begin with gender justice, seeing that the Commission on Gender Equality is not here. But before that, I would like to request the department to introduce the bill.
Thank you, Dr. Shun. The Maintenance Amendment Bill aims to amend the Maintenance Act of 1998. As an interim measure pending an investigation by the South African Law Reform Commission. When the Maintenance Act was enacted years back, that was premised on the understanding that the South African Law Reform Commission will investigate the entire maintenance system and for purposes of reform. And that investigation is now taking place. Over the years, users of the Act have identified areas of the Act requiring improvements. And these improvements are necessary in order to address the practical and technical problems experienced with regards to the application of the Act. In similar vein, interested parties have made calls for a sensitive and fair approach to the determination and recovery of maintenance. The bill will address the identified problems as, you know, pending the investigation by the Law Commission, as I've already indicated. Now, coming to the actual clauses of the bill. The bill amends various sections of the Maintenance Act and in some areas introducing a new provisions into the Act. Section 6 of the Maintenance Act deals with complaints relating to maintenance. Now, Clause 1 of the bill aims to amend this section in order to add another ground for investigating a complaint relating to maintenance. This clause requires a maintenance officer to also investigate a complaint relating to maintenance where a good cause exists for the substitution or discharge of a maintenance obligation in the case of a verbal or written agreement which has never been made in order of court. Section 6 of the Act also limits the jurisdiction of where a complaint of maintenance may be instituted. Currently, it limits that jurisdiction to the beneficiary's place of residence. This is the effect of inconveniencing beneficiaries who may be working and residing in different areas, rather in different magisterial districts. The clause A also aims to extend the jurisdiction of maintenance courts by permitting a maintenance court to also deal with maintenance proceedings if the beneficiary works or carries on business in the area of jurisdiction of the court, and not only if the beneficiary resides in the area of jurisdiction of the court, as is currently the case. Coming to clause 2 of the bill, this clause aims to amend section 7 of the Act, which deals with investigation of maintenance complaints. Clause 2 of the bill aims to amend this section by placing an obligation on mobile cellular operators to provide maintenance costs with contact particulars of would-be respondents and maintenance proposals. Clause 2 provides that if the court is satisfied that all reasonable efforts to locate the defaulter or would-be respondent have proved fruitless, the court may issue a directive in the prescribed manner directing one or more of the electronic communication service providers to furnish the court with the contact information of that person. The electronic communication service provider may then, in the prescribed manner by means of an affidavit, apply to court for an extension of the time set by the court on the ground that the information cannot be provided timely, or for the cancellation of the direction on the grounds that that service provider does not provide a service for the person identified in the direction, or that the requested information is not available on the record of the particular electronic service provider. The tariff applicable under the Protection from Harassment Act of 2011 will apply to the information requested. And currently this amount is set at 80 rand. The cost of providing the information to the court is to be borne by the complainant. However, the court may take into account the conduct of the parties to the inquiry as any irrelevant and make an order that it deems just with regard to cost of obtaining information. It is envisaged that this amendment will make a big improvement in the finalization of maintenance inquiries and of criminal cases pending against persons who contravene maintenance orders made against them and whose non-availability at inquiries and proceedings delay their finalization. Coming to clause 3 of the bill, this clause aims to amend section 9 of the Act. In terms of section 9 of the Act, a maintenance officer may cause any person, including a person legally liable to maintain any other person, to be subpoenaed to appear before the maintenance court to give evidence or to produce documents. Clause 3 aims to amend this section by providing clearly that a maintenance officer may also subpoena the beneficiary to a maintenance order, for instance, where a person against whom an order has been made is applying for reduction or substitution of the maintenance order. The object of this clause is mainly to create certainty that maintenance beneficiaries may also be subpoenaed and to dispel misconception that only respondents may be subpoenaed. Section 10 of the Maintenance Act deals with maintenance inquiries by the court. Clause 4 of the bill aims to amend this section by placing a duty on the court to finalize maintenance inquiries easily by limiting postponements. The proposed amendment also gives the court a discretion to make an interim order pending the finalization of the order where it becomes necessary to postpone such an inquiry. Before making an interim order, the court must be satisfied that there is a prima facie case that one of the parties is legally liable to maintain the person and that a postponement will cause the person to be maintained undue hardship. When the court makes a final order, it may confirm the interim order or set the interim order and set aside the interim order and make any other order that it may deem just in the circumstances. This amendment will address the problem of persons who, when they have an obligation to maintain another person, do everything in their power to avoid paying maintenance, thus causing those who are entitled to be maintained and who are mostly vulnerable and do hardship by deferring such a duty to pay. Coming to clause 5 of the bill, which aims to amend section 16, subsection 2 of the Act. Section 16, subsection 2 provides for a mechanism in terms of which maintenance can be paid by a third party, for example, an employer, a pension fund, or a provident fund. That has an obligation in terms of a contract to pay money on a periodical basis to a person who has a maintenance order against him or her on behalf of that person. In the case of State versus Mbwele, which is a 2000 case, court held that a court contemplating an order in terms of Section 16 of the Act should afford the person or the employer of a person with a maintenance liability an obligation to commence on the feasibility of such an order before an order is made. Clause 6 and 6 amend Section 16 of the Act in order to give effect to this judgment. The amendment will ensure that the court hears the views of the person or organization who may be ordered to make payments on behalf of a person who has an maintenance order against him or her. Coming to clause 6, which aims to amend section 17, and section 17 deals with order by consent. This section provides that a maintenance order may be made against any person not present at the inquiry. If that person has consented to the order in writing, and proof of that consent is handed in by the maintenance officer at the inquiry. Currently, the act requires the parties to be present at the inquiry, even if the respondent consents to the order or the beneficiary consents to the reduction or the discharge of the order. The proposed amendment in clause 6 will empower a maintenance court to make an order in the absence of a respondent or beneficiary or both if the order is consistent with the order handed in by the maintenance officer at the inquiry. A copy of the order must be served on the party that was absent at the inquiry, and it is envisaged that this will save time for parties who do not wish to contest the order for maintenance. Clause 7 aims to amend Section 18 of the Act, which deals with orders by default. Currently, a maintenance court may only grant an order by default if the court is satisfied that the respondent has ignored a subpoena. Clause 7 aims to amend Section 18 in order to empower a maintenance order, to empower a maintenance court to grant an order by default if the court is satisfied that the person fails to appear in court when he or she was aware of the subpoena or fails to appear after having been duly warned by the court to show appear in court. A consequential amendment is made in Section 9, which provides that a maintenance court, maintenance officer, rather, who has instituted an inquiry in a maintenance court may pass any other person to be subpoenaed to appear before the maintenance court and give evidence or to produce a book, document, or statement. The amendment makes clear that a person in whose favor a maintenance order has already been made may also be subpoenaed by the maintenance officer, where the person who has a maintenance liability is applying for reduction of the amounts relate or for the discharge of a maintenance order. This amendment will also dispel the misconception that only persons who have maintenance obligations and maintenance orders made against them may be subpoenaed. Coming on to Clause 9 of the bill, Clause 9 aims to amend Section 22 of the Act, which deals with substitution and discharge of maintenance orders. In the case of Panel versus Panel, which is a 1993 judgment, and which was decided in terms of the maintenance, the Repealed Maintenance Act, it has to be mentioned that the 1998 Act has a similar provision. In this case, in the final judgment, the court held that a subsequent order by a maintenance court replaces any former order. The effect of the judgment is that an order made by a division of the High Court and now also a regional court when the divorce is granted is deemed replaced in its entirety by an order of by an order made by a maintenance court and ceases to operate. However, in the case of Cohen, which is a 2003 judgment, the Supreme Court of Appeal held that the order of the division of the High Court is substituted only insofar as the order of the maintenance court expressly or by implication replaces certain earlier order. Clause 9 of the bill proposes to bring Section 22 of the Act in line with the Cohen judgment. Section 23 of the Act, which now deals with, which is dealt with in clause 10 of the bill, gives the maintenance officer a discretion to give the clerk of the court a directive to transfer a maintenance order from one court to the other. It has been reported that this discretion leads to inconsistencies in interpreting and often causes delays in transferring orders and should therefore be abolished. Clause 10 of the bill aims to amend Section 23, Section 1 of the Act by doing away with the discretion of the maintenance officer and thus establishing a uniform manner in which files are transferred from one maintenance court to another. This clause also contains a consequential amendment related to the jurisdiction of a maintenance court in terms of which a maintenance inquiry may be held in the maintenance court in the ministerial district where the maintenance applicant is employed or terms on belief. And coming to verse 11, which aims to amend section 26 of the Act. The enforcement of maintenance orders is provided for in this in section 26. And failure to pay maintenance is comparable with a civil judgment in a civil case. However, the mechanisms that are designed to prevent the defaulter from continuing to obtain credit while owing maintenance are not extended to orders of maintenance. A maintenance officer is only empowered to furnish the details of a maintenance defaulter to a business involved in the granting of credit or the credit rating of persons if that person has been convicted for the failure to pay maintenance. Clause 11 proposes a new provision in section 26 so that as soon as a complaint that a person has defaulted on a maintenance obligation is made, that person's personal details must be submitted to a business which has as its object the granting of credit or is involved in the credit rating of persons. Now, coming to clause 12. Currently, the Act only provides for the establishment, for the attachment of emoluments when a person has failed to pay maintenance and when a court suspends the warrant of execution under section 27, subsection 4 of the Act. Clause 12 aims to amend section 28 of the Act in order to expand instances where a court may order the attachment of emoluments to include when a court orders the attachment of debt under section 30 and after hearing the employer of the fault. Section 30 provides that a maintenance court may make an order for the attachment of any debt at present or in future owing or accruing to a person against whom a maintenance order has been made for the amount that the person owes together with interest and cost of the attachment or execution. The person must pay within the specified time and in the manner prescribed. It is contemplated that this amendment will cause defaulters to pay their maintenance arrears. Clauses 13, 14, 15, and 16 aim to increase penalties applicable for various offences under the Maintenance Act. Clause 13 proposes to increase penalty for failure to pay maintenance from a maximum of 1 year imprisonment to a maximum of 3 years imprisonment. Clause 14 aims to amend section 35 of the Act and proposes to increase penalty for willful interruption of a maintenance inquiry or obstruction of a maintenance court from a maximum of 6 months imprisonment to a maximum of 1 year imprisonment. Clause 15 aims to amend section 38 of the Act and proposes to increase the penalty for failure by a third party to pay money in terms of an emoluments attachment order from a maximum of 6 months imprisonment to a maximum of 2 years imprisonment. And clause 16, which aims to amend section 39 of the Act, proposes to increase penalty for failure to give notice of any change of address of employment or residence from a maximum of 6 months imprisonment to a maximum of 1 year imprisonment. Clause 13 also aims to amend section 31 of section 4 of the Act in order to oblige a maintenance officer to furnish the personal particulars of a person who has been convicted of an offense for failing to pay maintenance to any business which has as its object of granting of credit or is involved in the credit rating of persons. Currently, a maintenance officer only has the discretion to do so. The Act therefore abolishes the discretion of the maintenance officer. It is envisaged that this amendment will ensure that maintenance defaulters do not continue to obtain credit while owing the maintenance. Clause 17 creates new offences to deal with persons who obstruct or hinder a maintenance investigator from exercising his or her powers or who impersonates the indigenous individuals. A fine or a period of imprisonment not exceeding 2 years is proposed for a conviction for any of these offences. Coming to clause 18 of the bill, which is to amend section 41 of the Act. Section 41 requires a maintenance court to conduct criminal proceedings in respect of failure to pay maintenance or in respect of the enforcement of a suspended sentence caused by failure to pay maintenance into an inquiry if it appears to the court that it is desirable to do so or if the prosecutor requests the court to do so. Clause 18 proposed to amend Section 41 in order to make provision for the trial court at its own discretion to order that criminal proceedings be converted into a maintenance inquiry. In the case of State v. Magagula, a 2001 judgment, the court held that the question whether or not a court should convert a criminal trial into a maintenance inquiry should be in the form of a discretion and should not be obligatory as is presently the case. Clause 18, therefore, seeks to amend Section 41 in order to give effect to the judgment of the court in this Magagula judgment by making provision for the trial court at its own discretion to order that criminal proceedings be converted into an maintenance inquiry. Clause 19 contains the short title and the commencement of the Act. And while the, regarding the implementation, because there will be a need for regulations for in respect of clauses 2, 11, and 13B, these clauses, it is proposed that they come into operation on a date to be fixed by the President by proclamation in the Gazette. Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for the introduction. I'm going to request Shonke Justice to do that presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. And good morning to the committee. My name is Esau van der Berg, and I represent Shonke Justice. And I'll proceed with some extracts from our written submission and a few comments. Shonke Gender Justice welcomes the opportunity to make a submission to the Portfolio Committee on the proposed amendments to the Maintenance Act. This submission is made by Shonke, but it includes the perspective of the Men Care Global Fatherhood Campaign. The Men Care Campaign is coordinated by Shonke and Promundo US. It's aimed at promoting men's involvement as equitable, non-violent fathers and caregivers in order to achieve family well-being and gender equality. Globally, a body of evidence confirms that engaged, responsive fatherhood and men's participation in their children's lives that goes beyond just financial contribution has positive effects for women, children, and for men themselves. We wish to make it clear that we are not representing the right of fathers to be parents in isolation. We in fact are more concerned about the right of children to be receiving proper caregiving and of course the gender equality benefits for mothers of children as well. In research conducted by Sonke in 2013 suggests that one father out of two is absent from their child's life in South Africa, at least. Within this context, there has been growing emphasis in South Africa and around the world on increasing fathers' involvement with their families. However, while legislative initiatives in this area seem to focus on augmenting fathers' financial support of their children, without disputing the measures aimed at enforcing parents' financial support are worthwhile, it is important to acknowledge that responsive and responsible parenting should go beyond simple financial contribution and include preferably day-to-day emotional support and non-violent physical contact. In preparing this submission, we have taken view that unduly punitive measures designed to enforce financial support can sometimes have negative and discordant effects. Harsh penalties for child support non-payment unduly and disproportionately affect low-income debtors who may not have the capacity to meet their maintenance obligations. In particular, the penalty of incarceration not only has a direct impact on existing child support obligations, it also impacts more generally on debt and on the lives and families of defaulters. The consequences of incarceration are far-reaching and, in our view, do not meet the overall goals of child support. We wish to note our overall endorsement of the Maintenance Act Amendment Bill, and we hope that implementation of the new provisions will be a seamless and effective process. While we welcome the overall import of the bill, we wish to note our concern over those provisions allowing for and extending the time frames for imprisonment in instances of non-compliance. We do not believe that detention is an appropriate sanction for non-compliance, and moreover, in their current form, we think that the provisions are so overbroad so as to compromise the overall goals of child support. Specifically in reference to the incarceration provisions, clauses 13, 14, 15, 16 and 17 of the bill, or the incarceration provisions, seek to amend sections 31, 38, 39 and the new section 39A of the Principal Act and contemplate imprisonment for certain offences. If the bill is passed in its current form, these provisions, if relied upon, could see defaulters being incarcerated for periods of up to 3 years. The incarceration provisions also provide for imprisonment of pension-fund administrators, employers, and others for periods of up to 2 years. In our view, these timeframes are extreme. They go beyond what is globally acceptable and are not underpinned by a clear rationale. Then to proceed on the point that incarceration is an inappropriate sanction, there is a strong body of literature suggesting that imprisonment is an inappropriate means by which to enforce maintenance payments. As suggested above, where a maintenance debtor is imprisoned for defaulting on their obligations, the consequence will be that such person will be rendered unable to work, and this could render them unable to meet their existing and future maintenance obligations. Similarly, the incarceration provisions could result in absent parenthood because the debtor will have limited visitation rights and little ability to provide emotional and day-to-day support to their children. Across jurisdictions, a range of alternative penalties are stipulated, and we believe that these alternatives would be better suited within the context of maintenance enforcement. Alternative penalties might include, for example, the withholding, revocation or suspension of passports, visas, drivers and other licenses, and or affecting membership of professional bodies. We wish to note that non-compliance with maintenance orders should be considered reasonable grounds for the revocation of membership to certain professional bodies, and especially those professional bodies which demand the utmost integrity of their members. The above notwithstanding, we recognize that detention is deemed an acceptable means for enforcing maintenance obligations around the world in certain contexts. For that reason, we foresee that the incarceration provisions contained in the bill are likely to be retained. We assume retention of the incarceration provisions, but suggest ways in which the severity and scope need to be curtailed so as not to compromise the overall objectives of child support. In relation to duration, the incarceration provisions contained in the bill allow for imprisonment of up to 3 years. This goes beyond what is set as a maximum duration in, for example, Canada, Sweden, and in the United States of America. As regards application, instances of detention pursuant to maintenance defaults tend to be ring-fenced such that they are relied upon only infrequently and as a last resort. Clause 13 of the bill makes no attempt to restrict instances in which imprisonment could be applied. We submit that the incarceration provisions of the bill should apply only in narrowly prescribed instances. For example, in the USA, reliance on similar incarceration provisions is limited to instances in which default exceeds a particular amount within a particular time frame. Provisions allowing for incarceration in instances of breach of maintenance laws in other jurisdictions largely contemplate the option of a fine payable in the alternative. Clause 13A and Clause 14 of the bill are particularly problematic in this respect, as they both contemplate the option of imprisonment without a fine. Imprisonment without the option of a fine is a serious infringement on the right to freedom, and we believe it should be clearly justified and narrowly restricted. Provisions allowing for incarceration to force compliance with maintenance obligations typically set out clear procedural guarantees and safeguards. This is because detention constitutes a deprivation of personal freedom, But in stipulating such safeguards, there is an added benefit in that parents will not necessarily be forced into absent and disengaged parenthood. We believe that an appropriate safeguard would be to prescribe that all sentences be subject to a period of suspension in order to allow defaulters an opportunity to remedy the breach. Unless substantially amended, we do not believe that incarceration provisions provide an appropriate or justifiable means for enforcing maintenance obligations. We submit that they be reconsidered in line with what has been suggested above and in line with the international best practice for enforcing maintenance. In conclusion, we wish to repeat our overall endorsement of the bill, which we believe could enhance the administration of maintenance in South Africa. However, our endorsement is subject to comments relating to the incarceration provisions proposed by the bill, which we deem to be extreme and not justified. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Do you have any comments or questions from members? In the absence of any,
I think it's quite clear what you're saying.
I think the submission from Zongi's agenda is also feel it is quite clear. I actually agree with you in terms of the issue of incarceration specifically. Because from where I'm sitting, if you imprison somebody for purposes of paying maintenance, and we find that these people who are affected by maintenance feel that they are supporting seven and more. So you take this one to prison, you're creating a social problem in the sense that these others now may not be able to get the support that you're getting. So I think the issue of imprisonment and their addition, and a reference to USA makes sense. We may have to look at that very, very, very close. I've seen even a lot of other people are complaining about that issue of incarceration because it may affect also some members of parliament. Because most of the people are really paying maintenance and very difficult subjects. I have personally dealt with maintenance matters, I know how sensitive they are. But the issue of imprisonment, we have to look at it very close because it limits people's eyes to attend to these matters because I think that's my feeling.
Thank you, Honourable Bongo. Any further questions and comments about clarification? Just to remind us of the main important thing in terms of the bill, to really come up with the monitoring order. We care for the well-being of children of South Africa. You know, fathers should worry about the kind of sanctions that will be applied. But at the end of the day, what is the center of the discussion, the whole issue of ensuring that there will always be maintenance, it will always be possible to manage to get the money for maintenance so that the children of South Africa don't continue to go hungry when they have fathers who can really afford to provide for them. What's just important is really coming up with a measure, without really being subjective about it, a measure that will actually make maintenance system of South Africa to be something that is workable for the people of South Africa. It's not about women and children only, just that women, of course, are in the majority of caregivers, but it's about women, men, and children of South Africa. Remember, also women can, at some point, be the ones that are liable for maintenance.
Yes, ma'am, I don't want to take you on, but I'm really seriously thinking that the prisons are poor. We are trying by all means to get people out of prison as much as possible. We now, and whether this will have an effect, is it effective? That becomes a question. Is it really effective to put somebody in prison? Are you going to make that person pay by putting him in prison? And if you're threatening to put him in prison, it's different. I think you're going to get 6 months if you go there. You know, even 6 months is too much. So I'm not sure if the increasing the amount of time he spends in prison is going to affect. But anyway, I was just commenting on this, and then I think I disagree with him on certain things. Like, he seems to be agreeing on certain provisions of the bill, which I disagree with. But that's something that we can discuss when we're clear. Thank you.
Thank you,
Thank you, Chair. I think the essence of this thing is, how do we make it more effective to extract names? So that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is that there are people who can't pay for one reason or another, and there are other people who won't pay because they spend money on cocktails or whatever the case might be. Now, there have got to be some sanctions in cases of serial offenders in these respects, because otherwise, where's it going to take us? So I understand the argument absolutely, and I do. I mean, the prisons are overfull, and people who go to prison emerge more criminalized than when they went in, and so on and so forth. But in the end, you've got to have measures in place in extreme circumstances that are going to force people who can pay the bonus pay, maintenance. And I think that's the distinction that we've got to try and build into the Act eventually as part of an interim measure that you were talking about.
Thank you, Honourable Shaw. And Honourable Breedenbach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not covered by Mr. Shaw. Thank you.
Honourable Breedenbach.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not too sure whether the department is allowed to enter the debate, but if I may, maybe the presenter would, as a result of the research, that give us an indication. What I would like to think, and it latches on to what Mr. Salford said, when a court imposes or is going to consider penalties or punishment, the court is obliged, in terms of the law, to look at various considerations, and as far as possible, to look at other measures other than incarceration. If you have suspended sentences, there are fines as an alternative, and there is periodical imprisonment. And surely the courts would, in their wisdom, if there is a person that hasn't been paid or hasn't been paid maintenance, the court is obliged, when coming to sentencing, to take all considerations, all factors into consideration. What would the effect be on the child? What would the effect be on the ability of the person to pay maintenance, and so on and so forth? So it might be useful to hear from the presenters what their research shows in that regard, and not simply to just reject the incarceration provisions. I think the incarceration provisions are there to cater the obstinate, willful refusal to pay maintenance. The courts will have a look at all these things when imposing penalties. There might be good reason to put a provision in to say, for instance, that the court will impose imprisonment as a measure of last resort. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Bishwick. I'm not sure whether I'd like to suggest asking the question to actually respond now to the concern that has just been expressed. But at the end of the day, what you need to take into consideration is that sanctions are there as a deterrent. And of course, what Mr. Patrick is actually putting forward is that there could be alternatives, but there's got to be a way of actually sanctioning those that cannot actually comply with the court, the order of the court. Do you have any thing that can put on the table now, Mr. Justice?
Thank you, Chair. I think we're actually in agreement. I think the options, likewise, heroical imprisonment, suspended sentences are some of the alternatives that would be sufficient. And I completely agree for the suggestion to propose an amendment that's based on excessive imprisonment as a last resort.
Thank you very much, Owati, acknowledging that imprisonment might also still be an option, but it shouldn't be excessive. Thank you. Prof.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I rise easy to support your statement, Chair, that imprisonment is considered here as a deterrent. There are many fathers who can pay, but who will not pay simply at times because they want to punish the mother. But this is at the expense of the child. So I think a deterrent of this nature is absolutely necessary.
Thank you very much, Honorable Professor Mfina. Can we close on this one and get to Mr. Sketch's presentation? Thank you so much, Justice.
To Madam Chair, my name is Dani Schutter. I'm an attorney from the wonderful town of Middelburg, Mpumalanga. Chair, next to me is my wife, she's also an attorney, and I'm under tremendous pressure because of maintenance. And Chair, I come from the viewpoint that to engage in litigation you need time, energy and money. If you're a domestic servant, you don't have time, energy or money, so maintenance should be easy. If you're a gardener, just lost your employment and now to garden work, don't have time, energy or money to bring an application for a reduction. So I come from the viewpoint that maintenance matters should be made easier and quicker. I also come from the viewpoint that for some reason in South Africa, our maintenance calls are most often found very far inside court buildings. There are less maintenance officers than prosecutors. So strictly speaking, we have less people working to improve the lives of our children than we have to expedite criminal matters. Mr. Chair, if we improve the lives of our children, we will help the rest of the justice system. I say the maintenance cases should be handled differently. Like in emergency monetary relief in domestic violence matters, a lady should go to court, apply for maintenance, and that very same day come back with an interim order. That interim order will be served by the respondent who will have time or he will have the opportunity to expedite if it's unfair. And then the normal route will take its course. But it will bring immediate relief for the applicant. The same applies to a person, a man who wants to ask, who wants to reduce the maintenance. So I say we should look at the interim order as a method. I also ask, why can't we fix that initial order? Because we've basically got four people, four types of maintenance respondents. The unemployed, which is very difficult. The employed, which is easy because you earn the salary. The self-employed, which is sometimes difficult. And then the hybrid, the mix between the two. I say, why can't we fix that initial order, that initial amount? And if it's fair, the closer to fairness it is, the easier it would be for maintenance eventually, because if the initial order, the magistrate makes the order immediately, it serves upon the respondent, and if it's unfair, the respondent will extradite. So I ask that we look at the interim method as a way to start maintenance matters. I also ask, why can't a lady, when she's pregnant, she fell pregnant a week thereafter, the husband tells her, or the man tells her that he's not interested in looking after the child that's coming, why can't she approach the court and ask that once baby is born, the order should be in place immediately? Why must she wait for the baby to be born, then go to court and wait 4 months? Why? I ask, can't we include that in that a pregnant lady can approach on the basis that the child is born in fact? I would like to refer to clause 4, Chairperson. If I may just get to clause 4. Chair, clause 4 basically allows for an interim order to be made when the court for some reason can't finalise the matter. I find I agree with the fact that an interim order can be made. I say it should be made on the very first moment the applicant goes to court. So I agree with what I said here, but I just want to ask some question on clause 4. It says that where postponement of inquiry is necessary and the court is satisfied with the esteem of court evidence prior to such postponement that one of the parties is legally liable to maintain a person or persons, an undue hardship may be suffered by the person or persons to be maintained as a result of the postponement. Okay, I ask what will now happen if it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, there are about 20 maintenance matters on the roll. When will that evidence be tendered? Because there won't be time to tender the evidence. So, in practical terms, I find that can't work. And then I also find the word undue hardship. Do we agree that if a child suffers hardship, that's fine? I think a child should not suffer hardship. So why must I now come and put undue hardship? I think, hence I say, if we start off with the interim order, the order is in place. If eventually the court decides that I'm paying too much, then it can be brought into calculation. If I pay too little, then obviously the applicant can ask for more. So I say it should be made easier, because the easier the maintenance matters are, the quicker and the better we'll serve our children. I've also listened to Sonke, and I enjoyed, and I think I enjoy the fact that they look at alternative sentences. I think that's a wonderful idea. I just want to mention that, remember, before a person is convicted of failing to pay maintenance, before that moment, there was first an order, the magistrate decided that you can afford to pay this maintenance, and then before you can be convicted, the magistrate must be sure that you have the means. There are no excuses not to pay. So by the time we reach that point, you're a maintenance defaulter. Two courts basically decided that you can afford it. So in extreme circumstances, I agree with Mr. Ralph. Unfortunately, we have in our country, especially men, who simply refuse to pay maintenance. And I think some cases they also want, they're not pleading on behalf of those persons. But I enjoy the fact that they bring alternatives. I think that would be wonderful. If I'm an attorney and I fail to pay maintenance, it should go to the Law Society. I fully agree. I ask, let's make it easier, let's make it practical, and let's take on the domestic violence, the interim order. I enjoy that one because that one is quick and it brings the parties to the table. I also ask that you revisit clause 4, undue hardship, and the fact that if there's no time, where will I tender the evidence? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Skeptis. Can I open for questions and comments from members? Honourable Charles.
Thank you, Chairperson. I love the simplicity of the system, and I appreciate the spirit in which the suggestion is being made. But again, I mean, there's a difference between a domestic violence order and a maintenance order for very good reason. I mean, one is semi-criminal and the other one is a civil claim, essentially. And what would worry me about the procedure would be the practicality of it. So a person goes and says, the father of my child earns R1 million a month. There's a case on in the moment, a very high profile divorce case concerning large amounts of maintenance. The husband can afford R200,000 a month to be paid to me. And that is seen as an order, right? Meanwhile, the husband earns not anything like that amount. So the whole thing is fractious, and the mother of the child is trying to make a point. Whatever the case, these things are ugly, always. In practice, how long would it take for that interim order to be made a final order when all the facts are taken into account, and in the meantime, the father is still liable to pay R300,000 a month, or whatever the case might be? So, I mean, the gentleman is one with which I can associate, but I'm just aware of the practicalities of maintenance courts and how they operate and their roles and how long it takes to get things done and decisions made. And I'd just like Mr. Sitter to comment on whether this is practical in effect.
Thank you, Chair. The respondent will have an opportunity to expedite. Just like in domestic violence matters, and I want to be clear on the specific part of domestic violence I'm referring to. I'm referring to emergency monetary relief. I'm not referring to physical violence where a husband withholds payment of mortgage payment, etc. So now the order, the applicant went to court today and denied and said that the respondent is earning a medivant. That afternoon the sheriff brings to her the interim order which says that he must now pay $300,000 a month maintenance. The respondent will have the right to immediately expedite and go to court and say, strangely enough, and say, I will suffer undue hardship because I'm not earning $1 million a month. She's purely lying. Here's my proof. I earn $100,000 a month or whatever the case may be and ask for an immediate reduction of that order. And if he has a valid response, obviously, then the order would be reduced. And if the woman lied, which unfortunately does happen, then she will face consequences because of that. So I think it can happen very quick, like in domestic violence matters where you have 24-hour expedite time frame.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. I think what's actually coming out of the presentation is an emphasis is just on the sport interim that can be positively and negatively adjusted. And I think it will then be in the position to take care of Honorable Charles concerns about women in Malawi. But also, what has also been mentioned is reference to undue hardship. And in application of what is supposed to be undue hardships, because what's important is to actually ensure that the situation of children is always good. There's no way of actually having case postponed indefinitely with children who are suffering. Do we have any further comments or questions on our table?
Thank you, Chief. And I would like to appreciate and align myself with the presentation by Mr. Skelter, more especially where it relates to emergency monetary relief in terms of the Domestic Violence Act. The intention here is to make maintenance matters more accessible, more practical, and more easy, especially for our rural women who have to travel more than 50 kilometers to go to the nearest magistrate. And unfortunately, there will be such very, very numerous delays. But in terms of this amendment, my observation is that the interim order will then suffice. Hence, I say that the issue of emergency monetary relief in terms of domestic violence, if although it may differ in process and procedure, but in principle, if the same similar sort of modus operandi is applicable, that will be of assistance to our especially rural women who in most cases are not even literate enough to get understand how courts are operating. And then again, Chairperson, may Mr. Skelter maybe clarify me on the issue of a pregnant woman applying for maintenance. I didn't get it clearly.
Yes, even myself, I actually want to have clarity around that. So how do you then manage to confirm paternity when the woman is still pregnant? Because paternity also should come into play and that kind of an order is made.
Thank you, Dee. With paternity, it can only go two ways. First of all, the man can say, I suspect I'm not the father. Or he will immediately admit, I am the father. I say there should be an interim order. The applicant goes to court and say, I am currently pregnant. My estimated date of delivery is 15 January. Then the court make an interim order. That as from the 1st of February, in other words, 2 weeks after delivery, you should start paying maintenance. That's the man will come to court with expedite and say, I'm not the father. I suspect I'm not the father. And that's good cause for the interim order not to take effect. Or the man will come to court and say, I agree, I am the father. But I can't afford the amount, for one, or secondly, I can afford, I will pay. So I think that's, because what's happening now in our country is that that brutal woman must now wait for delivery. And when she has time, money and energy, because she needs that to fight litigation, she must go to court, apply for maintenance, the matter will be disposed, because in our maintenance courts we have one magistrate in rural areas, but we've got four or five criminal magistrates. We should actually put our focus on the maintenance issue, because if we have more maintenance magistrates, more maintenance officers, we will have less criminal courts. So then that pregnant or that woman with a newborn baby will have now to go, and now she waits 3 months before eventually the man is before court, and then he starts with all the stories of he can't afford whatever. So we lose 6-7 months. Now for me and it might not be a problem, but for an unemployed or a domestic servant it might be a problem. So I say, you file the application, the moment you know that you're pregnant, you've got your delivery date, and it only kicks in after the baby was born, because it might happen in some instances that the baby in fact is not born. So then the order doesn't take effect. So I think from a practical point of view, it can work easily on the basis that it only kicks in once the baby is born.
Thank you, Mr. Tufflet. There's a lot of technicalities that will have to be taken into consideration. Do you have any further questions and comments? Members, thank you. Can you close on this one? Is the CG ready? Commission on Gender Equality. Over to you.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Wendy Vandila from the Commission for Gender and Equality. I will begin with the definitions, comment on the definitions. The Commission for Gender and Equality recommends the insertion of a definition relating to the alleged mention of defaulter to the effect that it would be stated as any person who is liable for the maintenance, upkeep, and welfare of any person in terms of any relationship, court order, agreement, law, or legitimate expectation, and where such liability has not been fulfilled for any period of time. The purpose of this definition will create certainty in ascertaining whom exactly is in default and who can be held accountable for defaulting in terms of any maintenance order. I will move on to Clause 1, which is the substitution of Section 6. The CGE welcomes this proposed amendment due to the fact that it seeks to expand its jurisdiction. And it will give maintenance officer allowance to investigate complaints made without court orders, the implication of which will reduce the prejudice experienced by the complainants. I will further move on to Clause 2, the amendment of Section 7. The Commission for Gender and Equality welcomes this prospect as it will ensure successful compliance with court orders, successful ability and enforced liability, and it will also reduce default and maintenance. A concern arises, however, with the board framing of the clause, which would have certain indications with regards to the complainant. The aim to provide adequate protection to the complainant. This cannot be achieved if the clause is broadly phased and will apply to both the complainant and the person liable for maintenance. We therefore have suggested that the clause be revised with the following insertion. Section 7, 3, subsection H3, of the Principal Act with regards to cost for providing information. We have the reasoning that adding the additional burden of having to provide costs in the face of costs incurred for information provided by electronic communication service providers will be burdening unnecessarily the people who find themselves in a predicament while failing, The reason for this is because usually and most naturally, it is in most cases persons who are in financial difficulty that seek maintenance, and burdening them with more costs will be adding to their predicament while failing to acknowledge their financial constraints. Furthermore, we recommend that a revision of this proposed clause to allow the electronic service provider to levy a charge on the relevant customer. customer. Alternatively, the cost must be borne by the electronic communication service provider. Moving on to the continuation of Clause 2. We as the GCE have considered the role of family members in the default of maintenance of an order made against the father. We ask that the amendment include a subsection to the effect that the court may issue a direction in the prescribed form directing one or more electronic communication service providers as well as any family member. This is because through our observations in dealing with complainants, in cases whereby a maintenance order has been granted against the father, his default is sometimes condoned by family members. And based on this above rationale, it seems plausible to include family members to ensure a higher level of accountability. Moving on to Clause 3. The proposed amendment to Section 9 is supported by the CBE. It extends broadly to cover any person that is affected by a maintenance order. The benefit to this would allow the maintenance officer to be able to subpoena the employer of a person legally liable to maintain any other person. The formative phase is posed in a manner that suggests that the legislature intends to protect a person who already has a maintenance order in his or her favor. The person liable for maintenance seeks to charge below the maintenance payable in terms of the order. Recommendations from our side is the effectiveness of this favorable development of the law will only find light with the insertion of a penalty clause. This will therefore ensure compliance. We recommend a penalty clause as follows. Any person who willfully fails to comply with a subpoena, including persons who provide information that is incorrect, shall be guilty of an offense and liable on conviction to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 1 year. That is the conclusion of Clause 3. Moving on to Clause 4. The CGE does not support the proposed amendment in its current form. The reason for this is we want to avoid lengthy and numerous postponements, which often frustrates the complainant. These arise due to the fact that persons who elect defend maintenance claims appoint legal representatives and seek numerous and lengthy postponements. Our recommendation is, in order to mitigate the prejudice suffered by the complainant, the Commission for Gender Equality recommends the following revision to Clause 4 at Section 10, Subsection 6E. In the instance where a postponement is for a period of one or more then the court must grant an interim order provided that the conditions in Sub 1 and 2 are fulfilled. Move on to Clause 5, which is the proposed amendment to Section 16. The CGE welcomes this amendment in its current form. We move on to Clause 6. The CGE welcomes this proposed amendment in its current form, and it's due to the fact that we see the provision as an innovative step. The implications of which will allow the court to make an order in the absence of the appellant or the respondent, or even if both parties are absent, which works in favor of many disadvantaged women. It seeks to protect any person who may be prejudiced by having to appear in maintenance court on numerous days. It also seeks to ensure that despite their absence, the parties involved remain actively informed about the outcome of the proceedings. That is the conclusion of Clause 6. Clause 7. The CGE supports this amendment based on its protective nature. Moving on to Clause 8. Based on the reason, the CGE does not support this proposed amendment based on the reasons pertaining to costs. This would prejudice complainants who may already face financial difficulties. And as mentioned before with the previous clauses, and the additional burden is not favorable. In terms of Clause 9, the CGE supports the clause in its current form. So, just like Clause 10, Clause 11 is also welcomed in its current form as it aims to ensure that maintenance defaulters are treated in the same way that debtors are treated when they are in default of their contractual obligations. In respect to Clause 12, the CGE welcomes also this proposed amendment, and as Section 28 of the existing Act is limiting in its application. Moving further to Clause 13, the proposed amendment to Section 31. Section 26 of the Principal Act is amended to allow for warrant of arrest to be issued and executed by way of following proposed insertions. So we are suggesting a proposed insertion to Section 26, adding C. where a person against whom an order for the payment of maintenance in terms of Section 16(1)(a) or 21(d)(a) has been in default for a period of 2 consecutive months, or more than the clerk of the court must, the clerk of the court must immediately upon request by a complainant issue an executor warrant for the arrest of the person concerned, who may then be treated in terms of Section 31(1) within 48 hours of such arrest. The implications of this will ensure greater compliance with maintenance order and send a warning to maintenance defaulters that their conduct will not be condoned. Although the Commission for Genuine Quality welcomes the increased penalty from 1 year to 3 years, it does not support the proposed amendment in its current form because the existing provision has not been implemented effectively. The above-mentioned proposal by the Commission for Genuine Quality will ensure that the above-mentioned shortcoming is therefore addressed. Moving on to Clause 14, 15, and 16, those are all supported by the CGE in the current form. Moving on to Clause 17. Various complaints have been brought to the forefront about individuals who impersonate maintenance officers, the goal of which is to intimidate or mislead complainants. Rectification of the above will be achieved by the insertion of Section 39A. Moving on to Clause 18. Proposed amendment to Section 41. Section 35(3) of the Constitution of South Africa guarantees the right to fair trial. The amendment sought does not, according to the CGE, pass the constitutional muster. Why? A decision to convert a criminal proceeding into a maintenance inquiry on its own accord or on application by a public prosecutor with no guarantee that the interest or circumstances of the respondent will be considered by a court driven by the construction of the proposed amendment. This is in a failure to meet standards set out as in terms of Section 35(b) of the Constitution. We recommend that an insertion of or on consideration of the circumstances provided by the respondent will then align the proposed amendment with the Section 35(3) of the Constitution. In conclusion, Section 28 of the Constitution of South Africa guarantees every child a right to basic nutrition, shelter, basic health care, and to be protected from maltreatment, neglect, and degradation. This is a positive duty on the state to ensure that every child gets all of the above. Therefore, the CGE proposes that the establishment of procedures which will ensure that right to maintenance is given the priority it deserves within the administrative and judicial structures. And how is this going to be achieved? Procedures pertaining to the Commission, mediation, and arbitration, which will deal exclusively with maintenance matters. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, CGE. May I open for questions or comments from members? What is quite evident is that the CGE is actually supporting the interim arrangement, which is something that actually is in line with Mr. Fletcher's presentation, to say that there should be an interim order made. And also you took into consideration the whole issue of postponement, which is good. Because at the end of the day, we just need to ensure that we have a maintenance system in South Africa that's workable for children. This is just the main idea. And we have noted your point that actually what it's about is that the current provisions aren't really being properly implemented. The department is here and they have actually heard you. So if you don't actually enter into all of these discussions and promulgation of legislation that's not implemented. Do we have any further comments and questions from members for the Commission of Gender Equality? Honourable Mutapo?
Thank you, Chair. For the presentation. This is a clarification question in terms of the Clause 2, an amendment to Section 733, where you intend to propose to involve a family member. So you can't elaborate on it. And again, on the last one of commission and mediation and application. Thank you, Chair.
And I also ask you to just clarify when you talk about electronic risk providers, that the charges should be in favor of the respondent. Just whether this is something that is in line with the financial services board policies.
Oh, thank you, Chair. With respect, I'll try and answer the first question, or the last question first. We'll be looking at the charges and the costs. Now, in terms of proposed amendments, I mean, what it seems to say is this here, I mean, if the defaulter can't be contacted, then the court will allow for the complainants to seek affidavit information from the electronic service provider. It could be something like CLC and Vodacom, which is a good move. And the CDS supports that because almost everybody is walking around with a cell phone. So just as much as this is a very, very progressive and a good move on the part of the legislature, we feel that we understand that the complainant is already suffering. Now, the cost of that information to be borne by the complainant is already struggling. Shouldn't be so, because the cost could be exorbitant. So the CDS thing is here, that cost should be borne by the defaulter himself, because he's causing problems. He's trying to evade detection. So let him bear the cost. Alternatively, the electronic service provider could bear the cost because it might be minimal on their part, because they could just pull out some records and provide this to the court or to the maintenance officer. So we don't know what the costs are. So if it's going to be a high cost, right, then it should be borne by the respondent. But if it's going to be minimal, then it should be borne by the electronic service provider. Because at the end of the day, the complainant is seeking relief. He or she is already burdened and facing difficulties. So that's what we're trying to say there. And in terms of whether that is in compliance with the Financial Services Act, we haven't checked that. But it would not be in contravention of any other law. We don't think so.
Thank you very much. I think basically our system of thinking is just in terms of transitions. Now it's about tracing.
Yes.
All right. So it would actually border much more on the protection of personal information. But thank you very much. Can you respond to Honorable Mr. question?
Okay. What the DG found was, when maintenance default takes place, you find that the person who is defaulting generally seeks the assistance of his family. They would stay together, in most instances it's the father that defaults. They would say, no, the father is not employed, he's not living there, or he's not available, he's not at home. And at other times, what we found is that the defaulter might be in a relationship with another woman who would then be aggressive towards the complainant and try and put obstacles in place for the complainant not to be able to access information in respect of the defaulter. So, if we now include the other family member, then such instances could be dealt with, or the person who is actually supporting the defaulter, especially the new woman in his life, can be held accountable. And that's a big problem. So that's what we're referring to the other family member. Sometimes it could be a father or mother as well. But more especially it happens where the default is living with another woman, in a relationship with another woman. It's a serious problem. Thank you.
Then if my child's not taking care of the woman, then I would be responsible as a mother. Let's say this to Buddha.
Can I respond to that?
You may respond, Mr. Kamrach.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. What has happened is it happens quite often, you're right, and in terms of common law that has developed, parents can be held responsible.
It's already applied.
Yes.
For grandparents to be responsible for maintenance of their grandchildren.
Thank you, Chair. That's correct. Thank you.
Officer, you wanted to say something?
Thank you for that opportunity. Maybe if I could just ask the Commission for Gender Equality, wouldn't Section 8 of the Maintenance Act already cover that situation? Because Section 8 deals with the examination of persons by maintenance officer. If the maintenance officer is struggling to find whereabouts of a maintenance defaulter, Section 8 could be used where the person, the family member, could be subpoenaed to come and give the information in a court situation. It would be interesting just to know to what extent is Section 8 of the Maintenance Act used, because that is intended to cover situations like that.
Get a response, Mr.
Cumbridge. Thank you, Chair. The passage is correct. Section 8 is not used effectively, and I'm glad that you raised it again in the proposed amendment. So we're saying make it more express so that it can be used more effectively to the benefit of the complainants. And I agree with this. There is a provision to that extent in Section 8, but this is more expanded. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Do we still have any further comments and questions from Justice?
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure if it's appropriate for me to make comments or if it's only members may respond. But, I'm not sure if I heard correctly, but was the point previously made that should a maintenance defaulter not comply with paying maintenance, family members can be held liable. So if that's the case, then I'll just raise a concern. I don't have a solution for it, but I would just raise a concern that that would emphasize or increase the burden of undead care, or at least of care work and paying for care work on women. Especially since we see that children who are not cared for by their biological parents are mostly cared for by their grandparents, and to be clear, as grandmothers. So just to be sure that I just want to raise the concern that we don't want to burden a grandmother with the maintenance of her son who's not paying maintenance as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think it goes back to the situation we discussed earlier of assessment. There wouldn't actually be an order that does not take any situation into consideration. So every individual situation will be looked into before an order of the court can be made. Do you have any further questions, comments, point of clarification? May I get the opportunity? Elaborate on your very last point about mediation, arbitration. What are you making reference to?
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for the question. What this is proposing is that court proceedings tend to get the serial, and complaints generally tend to be intimidated by the procedures and also the formalities in court. So the CJ is saying, look here, why don't you look at the possibility of a less adversarial, less formalized approach dealing with maintenance? Look at a possible model like the CCMA, you know, where both parties can come there and deal with it. Deal with the dispute in a less formal, less adversarial manner. That is basically what we're proposing. Because I see that our judicial system is moving towards mediation, where we have court-based mediation, which is wonderful. It's more swift, it's quicker, and there's more consensus between the parties. So that's what we're proposing, a less formal way, or new model of approaching the resolution of disputes. More arbitration rather than court proceedings. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kamraj. Are you ushered an honorable Mr. Hapo?
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you. Can you show your mic? Thank you. May I take the opportunity of thanking you all for having made yourself available today for this hearing. This ends the business for the day. Thank you.